welcome to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing The Howler and 80 Days.
It is our aviation suite.
Yeah, and they're both also mobile games that are available on Steam as well. So
yeah, and it's a nice object lesson between those two things about what is a mobile game that makes sense on Steam. And what right? is a mobile game that makes a little bit less sense on Steam?
Yeah.
This is a cautionary tale about adaptation.
Yeah, yep. So yeah, we're back after a little bit of a vacay time. But kicking off with some of these shorter games. We'll have a little bit of longer stuff of some cheap games that we picked up in the recent sale next week. And then I think another episode that we're still planning. And then we're going to do a big episode on The Witcher 3.
The Witcher 3, which kind of qualifies.
For the
conceit, but we both want an excuse to play it.
Yeah,
and it is not strictly an indie game by any means, but it also has kind of this weird, CD Projekt Red has that kind of like origin.
Yep,
as being an also ran, as opposed to the kind of big studio. So
yeah, and they're an indie publisher themselves. So
yeah,
and GOG. So
yeah, and it's every once in a while, Watch Out for Fireballs does new games.
Uh-huh.
Every once in a while,
we'll do
triple A game with your kind of experiences, just very occasionally.
Yeah,
people asked when we talked about doing this, this does not mean that someday, way off in the future, we might do Witcher 3 for Watch Out for Fireballs too. If we may end up doing like a beat by beat breakdown book club style podcast about it, in a couple of years.
Yeah,
this does not preclude that.
No, and that's happened with other podcasts too. We've covered stuff that's ended up on Bonfire Side Chat. So
yeah,
I think that,
and Will again, like Momodora is going to be in the off season. So
right, yeah.
There are so, different levels of examination. So
exactly in different contexts. Like yep. This is just was it good? Should you play it?
So, yes.
And that'll be your preview into a couple years from now when they talk about how amazing every little mission is, because that'll be a 5-episode breakdown of every side quest.
It will be a nightmare. let's talk about The Howler.
Okay. So The Howler, it's available on Steam, as I said, but it's also available on the Apple App Store. And not on the Android store, but on the Amazon store that you can buy for that, or that you can get for Android, which is weird. But it is it's essentially, one of those, it's a very classic game genre where you're just trying to land, like Moonlander style game, except the kind of tweak to this one is, well, it's got a cool painterly art style and you control it with your voice.
Yes. Which when you do that, it only really works as a game when you're doing that. And even then it feels a little like, so what you're doing is you're controlling the ascent of a balloon. You only control the vertical axis.
Correct.
Of your balloon. Wind determines the other things, and you're given a kind of increasingly complex task. So land in specific areas, make it over this obstacle, pick up objects, drop them in different places, and you can only control the up and down, and you just have little arrows that determine which way the wind is going.
Right.
When you're controlling this with your voice, which I didn't do on Steam, does Steam have microphone control?
You can enable it.
Okay.
It's not enabled by default, but you can enable it if you have a microphone set up.
Okay. I played it with my phone using my voice because I didn't realize that it could do it both ways, but I did it with my phone. And the idea being, I think, is that it leads to these kind of situations where you are louder than you want to be in order out of desperation.
Yeah, from the anxiousness it makes you kind of
you're about to hit something and you go and start yelling at your phone. Is kind of the hook.
And that's pretty much all of the hook.
That is the entirety of the hook, other than kind of its attractive art style.
Yeah.
and music, and it's also is tied into this weird science fiction book that you can get on Amazon that is a 400-page thing called Hour of the Wolf.
I wasn't even aware of this.
The Steam and Stone Saga, Book One. So this is a game that is part of like a multimedia kind of push,
Okay.
And that is the most steampunk looking thing I've ever seen in my life. The author is the most steampunk looking guy I've ever seen in my life. It is the most steampunk thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's incredible. There's two pictures. Make sure you see the other one, too. He's pretty incredible. So there's not, I think the idea being is that when you're playing the game, you're doing missions that are in the book, but you just don't have the context. Keep calling them missions, like mission complete.
Right.
But I found this game to be, even when I was playing with my voice, which gave me a little bit of, uniqueness and kind of fun to it.
Right.
I found it too simple to really enjoy.
Yeah, it's very basic. Like I said, it's the actual base mechanics, aside from being controlled with your voice, are something that's been explored for forever. Like, I was playing Lunar Lander stuff on Apple II in elementary school. So, there's nothing super new there. You're just, I mean, maybe dropping off packages, but I'm sure that's been done before too.
Like, there's nothing, the entirety of the hook is this idea of controlling it with your voice. And yeah. It reminds me a lot of seeing like tweets and stuff from people doing Oculus dev. Where mm-hmm. it's like, there's a like, oh, what if you could do it this, like, what is this weird new input method for this thing? And it kind of comes off more as a novelty than a game. Right. To me, like, it's novel to control this thing with your voice, but is not actually that fun.
Right.
You know, and it kind of strikes me like that. Or when you go to these like game jams, there's a lot of these things where it's like, this is a neat idea to control this in this weird way, but it's not anything more than just a neat idea.
It doesn't carry any weight beyond, yeah, I've experienced it once and I've got it, now it's over.
Yeah, it just ends up being not super fun.
Right.
And that's kind of how I feel about the Howler, is that, like, kind of a neat idea, not actually very fun to play. And the reason it's not very fun to play is you spend so much goddamn time waiting in this game for your really, really slow hot air balloon to, like, drift on these currents.
Yeah, if you miss like a rise, yeah. And you just have to like go up and wait for your balloon to go all the way back.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
we're really talking. Annoying. I'm sure we're talking about the same stage. It's like the fourth or fifth stage where like
yep.
you have to go over a spiked kind of steeple. The wind above the steeple is pushing away, pushing you back. The wind below the steeple spike is pushing you forward. So you have to use that forward momentum of the lower altitude to kind of leap over the spike.
Right.
But if you don't quite get over it, you have to go up into the upper altitude and just slowly make your way back to the beginning of the screen. I have very limited patience for the number of times I want to do that. It's like two or three, at most. And I know that as the game gets more complicated, you're doing more of these things that I just can't imagine the fail states not just getting more and more infuriating as you go.
Absolutely.
So kind of a bummer. Like I recommend it. I'll take the heat for this. I recommended this for doing the show because I realized I already bought it. I must have bought it when it was like nearly free on Steam.
Yeah, it gets down to like 50 cents.
And it got really good reviews. And I was like, oh, this aesthetically kind of looks similar. It's a kind of steampunky. Because this is like our aviation and then also our like steampunk.
Right.
Kind of special. I'm like, oh, it's another steampunk game. This might pair well with 80 Days, and it looks arcadey and simple. Something where I'm going to spend a lot of time playing 80 Days. I don't want to spend another, I wanted a potatoes game,
right?
Which it is.
It is. Yeah. And I think that, I didn't finish it, neither did you, but from my understanding, it's about maybe 30 minutes to an hour of total gameplay anyway. So
even with like doing things over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it is a super, it is this hour of the wolf. This thing is transmedia storytelling. So I think that the game, as you go further into it, does have reveals that are important to the book.
Could be.
Yeah. Eventually they want to do a animated series, a webcomic series, and other multimedia platforms.
Interestingly enough, that's also The Witcher is a book and game series.
Well, that's more of a straight, like, it didn't come out to say like, hey, this game is supplementing the book.
No.
The game adapts books that already exist. This was like they both were made at the same time.
That is weird.
This is similar to Richard Donner, or not Richard Donner, the guy who did Donnie Darko, his follow-up movie, Southland Tales, which also was a three-part thing. It was supposed to be the movie, the comic, and a book that never, or a web series, one of which never really came out, I think.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, and to get the whole story. This is very similar to that.
Yeah, so that's the Howler. Let's move on to the much better game of the two.
Yeah,
80 Days.
Yeah, this is a great game.
It's fantastic.
Time Magazine's Game of the Year in 2014.
It says it everywhere.
Yeah.
so as you would assume by that uh, that title. It came out in 2014 on iOS, Android, and in 2015 came out on Windows and OS X. And it is essentially a interactive fiction game with a lot, you know, there's a lot of graphical elements to it too, but primarily it is essentially the best choose your own adventure that's ever been.
It's really good. I won't go as far quite that far, but it's really, really great. It's an original. Inkle is the company that made it, which are the people who did the adaptations of the Sorcery games,
right?
Which are fantastic. Inkle also has a interactive fiction engine that they made, which is really great. So it's a really cool company, kind of company to watch here. And this is their first kind of original work, even if it is not wholly original.
Right.
It is largely original. And I'd played it before, but I gave up maybe, you know, partway through. And I was really happy to have an excuse to kind of push through. And it is a choose your own adventure where like the, let's get into the mechanics and stuff because it's more than just a choose your own adventure.
No, definitely. So primarily, I mean, as Gary was alluding to, it is primarily based off of Around the World in 80 Days, as you would assume from the title, but it also takes on the same sort of Jules Verne steampunk aesthetic, kind of taking that to the next level too. But you start off, as I believe the story does, I've never read it, but from my understanding, you are playing as Pespertau, or however you pronounce his name. Mm-hmm. And he helping to lead around the very wealthy Phileas Fogg on his trip around the world, his bet to get around the world in 80 days. And then from there, after you get to Paris, essentially from that point, it is all about finding routes and going around whichever way you wish to traverse, as you have different kind of abilities to get to different cities from where you're at, but you just have to get around it. You can go upper Asia continent and take the Trans-Siberian Railroad, or you can follow along the coast there. You could, I believe, even go up straight north out of Paris and try and make your way around the world the other direction. But along the way, there's sort of adventures in every little city where primarily you're just picking choices to advance a story as you're exploring the city to try and discover new routes. And there's also a mechanic for purchasing and selling items, which will help you on some of these quests, or as sort of a bargaining chips in various different sorts, or just as a means of keeping funds around. Because as you'll be alluded to many times throughout the game, object that you buy in one city can be worth a lot more money somewhere else. You can make money by attempting to travel towards that direction.
Yeah.
You also have access to Phileas's funds as well, but that is a time tax. You go to the bank and wait a certain amount of days in order to withdraw a certain amount of money to help you continue on the path.
Yeah, there's kind of different gameplay modes. So on one level, it is a routing game. Like you are, like you said, you're trying to find the most efficient route to get you through. There's this light economic sim, you know, of this trading thing and just keeping enough money to keep yourself soluble, because even routing costs money. Like these train tickets and stuff aren't gonna pay themselves. And then there is like a happiness sim kind of thing, because different routes maybe are quicker, but they are less comfortable.
Yes.
And you buy and sell equipment that will make you more equipped to deal with these different forms of travel to keep, because ultimately you are a valet. Like you are Fogg's man, you know, his
manservant.
Yes. And you are his comfort is, you know, paramount to you.
Yeah.
So those are the simulation aspects that are the skeleton that these little short stories are kind of hung on.
Right.
Where you stop in a town and you can, it's up to you how much trouble you want to get in. And you can do this game like more or less just treating it as a straight, you know, get around the world and get around the world fairly quickly if you take no, you know, opportunities to kind of stop and smell the sights or whatever.
Right.
Or see the smells or however that expression goes.
Right.
But the game encourages you not to do that. It really wants you to. One of the things that I think is remarkable and kind of beautiful about 80 Days comes from such a place of wonder and curiosity about the world.
Yeah.
It is the perspective this game is trying to ingrain in the player is one where the world is a wonderful place. It is full of magic, and it deserves, like, these things deserve your attention.
Absolutely.
That is trying to catch this, like, kind of, and that's the original book is kind of written in that too. Like, that is a Jules Verne kind of thing, but this just amps it up to 11. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea that, like, no, like, this stuff is remarkable. Like, you know, when an old English person like drops their monocle and goes remarkable, like this game is trying to sell you like, no, it's actually remarkable. It's not a, you know, it's not a joke. And the kind of the stories influence each other, you know, like you kind of get exposed to these different, not factions, but different kinds of concerns as you go through the world. There's this kind of tension between artificers, like these people who are making these clockwork automatons, and Luddites who don't want that to continue. There are different economic situations in every kind of city and country you go to. And it can't be overstated the number of like routes you can take.
There's an incredible amount, like every major city is on this map and every major city has something to do and some story to be told.
Yes. You know, and just going there and seeing these little stories and getting wrapped up in this kind of intrigue that these people, you know, in their lives is really, really compelling and great. I played through it twice for the show. Mm-hmm. And the first time I played through it, I ended up staying up until like 5:30 because I was racing against the clock to see if I would make it, because it does a really good job of like tension. Like the first time I made it around the world, I made it around the world in like 78 days.
My first one was 84.
Yeah.
Yep. Like it's I don't know how they managed to pace it out so perfectly, but
I think, I mean, I have some suspicions about that. I think it has to do with, at least partly with travel, being much more expensive when you get to America.
Yeah.
So you're encouraged to wait. So they have this kind of, this system where it's like, you may come into it and think, oh, it took me, I got halfway around the world in 40 days. I'm fine. But all of a sudden the money is going to start running out. So you end up having to wait and withdraw money from the bank.
Right. Yeah. Often. Money is a bigger factor in the Americas, but travel is a much like getting across wide swaths is a much easier thing to do.
So. You end up taking a lot shorter trip. So if you're like in a city and like you just go to another city in America and you have to wait a day, you maybe don't make that much geographic progress.
Right.
You know, so it is there are a lot of different factors you're kind of working out there. Both times I made it and both times I got kind of a standard ending, which is just like a celebration that you made it. But one of the coolest things, and I haven't looked up very much about this, I need to look at the wiki, but there is a really, really rare ending apparently that only 8 people have seen.
What? Have gotten to. That's incredible.
I love that. Like if you can do something that hidden, like in a video game, I fucking love it. Like other people have probably seen it like on YouTube or whatever, but 8 people have like done the things the required. Steps. Yeah. And then maybe, you know, that's at the time this Wikipedia was written. It's possible that has changed as more people looked up on the wiki how to actually do that.
Right.
But that's fantastic. You know, that kind of like level of detail.
It also states on the wiki too that in, you know, one game, circumnavigating the world once, you will likely, most players will see approximately 2% of the total text that is in this available in this game.
It is. That's it's incredible. Just, yeah, it's a triumph. Like good. The woman who wrote this woman named Meg Jayanth, who mostly just like wrote for The Guardian and stuff like that before this. Like this is her first kind of novel or game. Mm-hmm. Really, really impressive.
It's super impressive.
Like, and it's been recognized. Like, we're not, you know, we're late to this party. We're not early to it.
Two years late.
Yeah, but it is just, it's phenomenal. Like, what a cool game.
It's really good.
What a cool like work and cool kind of triumph. Of games and interactive fiction.
I mean, I don't remember specific locations or names, but do you want to go into a couple of general like cool scenarios you got into or cool things you saw your routes?
Yeah, and also just to kind of compare notes, because did you run into the giant mechanical bird thing that like swipes you up and brings you up to a building and threatens you?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you get captured by pirates in a flying airship as you were driving a car?
No. No, that's so cool. It's so good. I really want to know, the bird is crazy because it's it threatens you and says like, hey, don't take this one route. But that route was the fastest, best way to go. So I went and my guy is just like, I wonder if it was just an empty threat and nothing ever came of it. But I'm sure there's more with that fucking mechanical bird.
Yeah, this game doesn't feel like it leaves any ends untied. I'm pretty sure that there's something to be found in every which way you go. If not, they definitely put in the feeling of that, which is almost as good. So
yeah, that's still really important to feel like every single choice you make, every little, like there's tons of things under the rocks, you know, if you look around.
Right. I at one point I got captured up by pirates and managed to smooth talk the female leader of the pirates, I believe, who ended up telling me about this artificer who she used to be close friends with and hasn't talked with in a long time, and gave me a gem, like, you know, one of the artificer gems that are used in their automatons, and asked me to take it to him. And I think I managed to just barely make it, but the guy was pretty hush hush about the whole thing. But it was cool that I had to like go through this whole thing of like talk. She swiped me up. She really just wanted to take the car that we were in. They just wanted to steal that from me, but managed to smooth talk her enough to get her to open up to me and ask a favor of me. And that was one of the really cool bits, right kind of in the middle of my run.
Mm. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other, like, that was definitely the craziest thing that I saw. A lot of like that feeling of there being stories around you. Yeah. You run into a lot of other people traveling, several of them like incognito, or I exposed a couple, or didn't expose, but saw a couple people who were like stowing away. One of which was like a Indian princess.
I got that one too.
Yeah.
And I think that one, from my understanding, I think I like Googled the name or something. I believe that's actually part of the actual story. So we actually caught some of the book storyline route right there.
That's I was really curious as to what this would be like to somebody who has read the actual Around the World in 80 Days.
Yeah. It almost makes me want to read it because it actually sets up a really cool world.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how much of it, because I think this exaggerates the steampunk elements. But I am, does make me more curious about it. Or at the very least, like, I'll hunt down a movie or something.
Right.
You know, something a little bit easier to digest, but really impressive. And just that feeling of like loving care and detail in everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the, my favorite, little like touches is getting the items that are situationally useful, but not trade items.
Right.
Like where it's like, oh, cigars, like of interest to soldiers and lowborn types.
Uh-huh.
Or, I got, a set of dominoes. And then, because I had dominoes, after I found someone's dog, cause you end up finding a lot of dogs, that encounter triggered yeah, a few times. I don't know why.
yeah, I got that too.
But I ended up playing dominoes with a guy. And because I played dominoes with him, he told me of this like secret boat that was leaving.
Ooh,
there's
nice.
Like a different route. So like the way these things play into each other, the way you're rewarded for exploring, is really impressive. And just, it is a really, really phenomenal kind of experience. The one that I recommend, wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and the fact that it is built for the mobile, like it's available on Steam, like we said, but I played it on mobile and it plays just fine. And that's a great format for it because you can stop at any time and it's just, you know, just like you had a book in your pocket,
mm-hmm.
but one that you can choose all your routes and it has this whole deeper layer of Easter eggy cool exploration stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It is a wonderful, it deserved all the awards it got for a mobile game.
100%.
Yeah. And it would still play well on Steam, but I liked playing it on my phone quite a bit too. Playing it before bed, even though that led to me staying up like way too late. I love the way that Passepartout is and I'm also probably mispronouncing that, but
yeah, I don't know.
The way he was characterized as like, you know, you can kind of, so the way when I was talking about the optimism in the tone, the game lets you, it's not, you don't just make choices. You also dictate what's happening in the world. Mm-hmm. In a way that reminds me of like tabletop, certain tabletop games that have player controlled agency where you can get up in a city and you could be like, you know, I walk through the city streets and then you have two options. And it's like the people were rioting or, there were revels, you know, revelers about, or there were, you know, even sometimes it's not even that down to that perspective. Like it'd be like, oh, and the people were rioting, or art festooned every, you know, every available surface.
Yeah, you know? It's really good.
And you just get to choose not only like your own character, but also the kind of world that you're presented with. But both of which, even when there are people rioting, like you have it is still wondrous and kind to the individuals.
Yeah.
In this, like, it is still like, you know, then you can grab somebody, ask what they're complaining about. And then you run away from the cops and you end up in a cafe, you know, talking about the regime and stuff like that. Like I think this expresses, even though like, you know, I don't know if it's the best interactive fiction game of all time. I think it does express like a certain kind of high adventure, better than any piece of fiction that I can think of.
Yeah.
Like the real swashbuckling kind of like barely making it out. Like British gentlemanly adventure.
Yeah. Well, and you touched on the point too, that there seems to be a huge amount of just like optimism and wellness towards everybody. Like no matter what situation anyone's in, I don't think I talked to anyone who was ultimately wholly villainous. Yeah. Like, everyone is a person who is doing things for a reason. And even when it's something, you know, like piracy or any of the sort of shadier stuff, they're not terrible people. They've just chosen a grayer shade than you have, or darker shade of gray.
And I think you can die in this game, but I never really felt threatened.
No.
You know, particularly, like, I always felt like I could reason my way out of this stuff, which is a very, like, of that time, you know, pip-pip kind of British, yeah, you know, perspective on these things that I just really enjoyed, you know. No villains, no monsters or anything. It's just people dealing with institutions, which is that's a good backdrop for a story. You know, that's realistic. Yeah. So really fantastic stuff.
Yeah, another thing you kind of have agency over in that vein too is sort of the personality of Passepartout, in that, like, certain choices you make in dialogue it'll tell you, like, your character is now this trait, and that'll come to play in future interactions. If you were trying to be charismatic and swoon this girl on the train, then you'll become sort of the romantic, and you'll do better in those situations in the future. And that's really neat too. You're also, even though he's a character out of a book, you get to influence his entire personality throughout your personal run of the game. Mm-hmm.
And there's so many moving parts and flags upon flags upon flags. Like, it's hard to tell what exactly is being influenced, but I would not be surprised if it was, you know, the reason why I saw the things that I saw was because two towns ago, I did something that made my guy a little bit more lecherous.
Right.
You know, really, really impressive shit.
And even if not, like I said before, if the fact that it instills that feeling in us is almost as good.
Yes. That feeling of complexity is really, really important.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. Cool game, man. I'm glad this one came up. I believe it's been recommended on Slack a couple times, but I don't particularly remember by who. And the fact that it's kind of just had all this praise anyway. I apologize to anyone who's specifically pointed it out to us, but I'm glad we got around to it, and hope you have enjoyed our look at it as well.
Yeah. You know, we do new and old stuff, even though the things we're doing next episode are more skew new. Thank you guys very much for listening. This is a slightly shorter episode than most, but we did not expect the howler to be quite as slight as maybe it was. We're still looking for suggestions for both meaty games and short arcade games,
especially those, because they're so easy to just fit in with something we want to do that's on a grander scale,
that we want to actually beat. Oh yeah, real quick, just because this is the place for it. We never do follow up on the show, but I actually did follow through and beat Neon Struct, and nice. It's good. It's shorter than I thought it was going to be based on where I was at. I was closer to the end. And it is a real cool little, like, parable about surveillance states. And I ended up really, really enjoying it. So we recommend it on the episode, but still play it.
I went back and listened to the soundtrack more because it's
really good. I like that. The Home Conversion is the name of that band, and I like them a lot.
Yeah, what's the...
Cave Living?
Cave Living's good. Are You Trying to Break My Heart is so good.
Good shit.
It's good stuff.
that band is really good. Somebody once asked us on the Slack, they're like, do you guys ever go back and play the games that you guys do a little bit of and say you want to go back and play? And the answer is a lot of times no. But sometimes, you know, we do. And I wanted to make a point of beating Neon Struct because I liked it so much.
Yeah.
And it is very good.
Yeah. There's certainly been some that I've played a significant bit more, but
yeah. So someday we'll do next time we do, maybe before the end of the year, we can do like a revisit episode, like go back through our list of things, pick out a game that we started but never beat, choose to beat it, and then go back and cover kind of book report. Like we both do.
Totally. Even just looking through our, I think we did this last time, but just kind of looking through our, what we have and talking about what didn't get covered in the show that we continue to play.
The year-end wrap up.
We've done a little bit of that, but making a point of it would definitely be a good thing.
So if you like this show, you can support us financially on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, that is the best and most direct way to support the show and the entire network.
Right. And doing so will get you access to our Slack channel at a certain level, and also special episodes of shows that we are bringing on. And the more people we get to on the Patreon, the more shows we're going to be doing as well. So there's some cool stuff coming up.
Yes.
On there. Has the X-Men podcast been officialized yet?
Not yet. We're trending upwards while kind of hovering up and down.
Right.
Like the highest we were like at 3 3,310, which is 190 away. I think right now we're about 270 or 230 away. So it kind of goes up and down a little bit, but trending upwards. I think we'll get there hopefully by the end of the summer.
Good, because the preview episode of that's really good, and Jeremy Greer is a great guy, and I hope you guys get to do that show soon.
Yeah, Jeremy's wonderful.
Jeremy is great.
Yeah, I love him. Yeah, so thank you guys very much for that. If you don't want to support us on Patreon, you can also rate and review the show on iTunes. Mm-hmm. That is very helpful.
If you have any suggestions to make, you can come find us on Facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or on Twitter at Comrade Podcast, and the contact form on duckfeed.tv, all of which we will look at and add to our list and possibly pick up sometime soon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, so until next time, thank you and good night.
Night.